let me apologize, but I hope you will, as rabbis, have compassion for my enthusiasm about the nation of Norway, its 150th anniversary presence in America. And if only you did not have such a deep disagreement on other issues, we could all join forces in congratulating the freedom fighters of Norway for the number of Jews that they saved at the risk of their life and at the donation of their lives during World War II. It wasn't just the Danes, they got the publicity. The Norwegian underground didn't do it on one day like the Danish underground did, the Arab Rosh Hashanah 1943. The Norwegian underground was constantly risking their lives and giving their lives to get the Jews of Norway into Sweden after Adolf Hitler decided he wanted their skins, literally, after 1943. My partners across the broadcast, they were Rabbi Eric Kahana, founder of the Jewish Defense League, Rabbi Sam Sober, Rabbi Temple Simon of Stanford, Connecticut. Was your meeting as cordial as it looked on the wall?
We both said that it was wonderful that you gave us time and this attention to the Norwegians. In other words, we were paraphrasing Shakespeare, who said, I came, I saw, and I concurred.
Were your own words among each other. Did you get down to cases? Is there anything that went on that our listeners should know about, or can we start putting together?
I'm very fond of Rabbi Kahana. Just can't stand some of his ideas and practices, but personally I find them irresistible.
Which one of his ideas should we begin with, Rabbi?
Let's do the good news first. I think Rabbi Kahana is, to a great extent, responsible for the tremendous emphasis being placed upon the need to rescue the Jews of Russia. I think he dramatized and highlighted that effort. And I think history will enshrine him for spearheading that particular effort.
I thought Rabbi Kahana lived across the street from the Soviet mission to the United Nations, because that's the only place I ever saw him for about 5 years.
And so it was my next thing. Well, you should have come to my pulpit. I had him in my temple. We engaged in a very agreeable colloquy. So that's the good news. And I think also he has been a very important force and factor in raising the ethnic consciousness of the Jewish people in contradistinction to the tendency on the part of some Jews to downgrade themselves. One of the worst ailments that Jews suffer from is what we call self-taste or self-hate. Rabbi Kahana, I think, has been singularly distinguished for elevating Jewish consciousness. So that's the good news. The bad news with Rabbi Kahana is that he has crossed the border sometimes of discretion and of moderation. And I'm going to give him a chance, but let me just capitalize it by saying, for example, illustrative of what I objected about in Rabbi Kahana's procedures is exemplified by the fact that one of his followers a few days ago was asked, was the GDO responsible for shooting into the bedrooms of an apartment? And this, I had deja vu, because once before the bedrooms of an apartment were shot at. And the JDO man said, no, we didn't do it, but we can understand or almost approve of that. Now, the moment that Rabbi Kahana begins to imitate our enemies and yields and resorts to violence, at that moment I take issue with him and I part from
Rabbi Meir Kahana. Well, you know, I'm just sitting here listening to something which I've heard a thousand times over.
That's no effect, though.
Not on those people. They'll say it. And I think it has a great, great influence on the fact that there are 100,000 Soviet Jews that are now inside Israel rather than back inside Russia. Over the past 6 years, 100,000 Soviet Jews have gotten out. He conquered this. Well, let me put it to you this way. You praised me, and you said that we took the lead in emphasizing the plight of Russian Jews. I ask you, how did you take that lead? And I put it to you that if you had taken the lead in the form of speeches, quiet protests, non-violent demonstrations, no one would have heard of the Russian Jews.
Is it Martin King?
To this day. No, because he had Jews who were ready to go to jail for blacks, but not Jews who were ready to go to jail for Russian Jews. Now, Rabbi Silver, I sat here quietly. Let me finish, okay? I know many, many rabbis who went to jail for blacks. Rabbi Heschel never went to jail for Jews. He never went to jail for Jews. And there were four rabbis who went to jail in Selma, in Jackson, Mississippi, never went to jail for Russian Jews. Now, I don't like to sit in jail. I don't like to shoot rifles, and I don't like to throw bombs. But right now, I'm a citizen of a country which came into being because of bombs. And I recall the same voices that are now attacking in jail.
Yes.
Attacks the Iran Muslims in American
Jews. Sure, attack. They went too far.
Okay. Because of them, there is a state.
And become a Hagana, which opposed the Iran as a state.
The Hagana was not known to throw flowers at the British either.
The Hagana was the British, the Israeli National Army.
What the Hagana did was, it was 3 years late. It was 3 years behind, but eventually it caught up to the Iran. In 1946, there was a joint Iran Stalinist Haganah struggle against the British. So Haganah used bullets, Haganah used guns. The state of Israel to blows up Arab homes, of course, in borders.
They didn't shoot them, but they
were. When the Israeli Air Force bombs Lebanon, so.
They killed them, everything they could to avoid the Soviet Union.
Yeah. And what bothers me most is that you sat here and you said they shot into a bedroom. Now one would have thought that this was perhaps a bedroom of a stockbroker.
Can you justify it?
Excuse me.
Of some of Russian people who live in the bedroom and have a woman and children.
Let me get clear. The Soviet mission to the UN. Let's first get the building. Secondly, the Russians said that the building, that the room was empty.
Can the fellow that shot know it?
Can the fellow that shot know it was
a bedroom? You didn't know it was a bedroom?
I don't know. I didn't know it when we did, and it happened before, and again, at that time, the JDS I'll say it again. The person that did that, I back him, I approve him, I support him. This was 1940. And that embassy wouldn't have been the Soviet embassy, but the German embassy. You very, very well might be still sitting there and saying that. That's awesome.
I see a distinction between the Nazis and the Russians.
Ah, that's the problem.
You don't.
That's right, I don't.
I do. They let them out. They don't burn them. They burn their books, but they don't burn them. You don't see the difference between burning people and burning books.
Well,
you see the difference between exterminating people and not letting them function religiously.
Yes.
You don't.
We have a Jewish holiday, Hanukkah, in which the Maccabees rose up, not because the Greeks bombed them. There's no problem of killing them. No extermination camps. They simply burned their books. They simply said, you can't. We Jews went to war and we killed Greeks for that. When a Jew,
what was the year, just to get on 65 before the Christian war,
right? We Jews, the Maccabees were young and we should have evolved.
The Maccabees were threatened with a total extinction of the religion.
And that's exactly what the Soviet Jew is. And if you don't know it after 55 years, you're exhibit one for the tragedy of the American rabbit.
No, I don't know. This is a nuclear age, and there's a difference. Here, if they irritate the Russians enough, the result will be incineration. That was not true in the days of the Maccabees.
Take a point. In short, what you're saying is, yeah, it's a tragedy. It's true that the Russian Jew may die out as a Jew, but that's a price that...
I didn't say that. Yeah. I say that the fate of the Russian Jews is negotiable.
Fate
of religion and during the days of the time.
I know that for 55 years, there was nothing negotiable. There was nothing negotiable. So after 55 years, we are faced with a tragedy
of a huge number of these Russian Jews who aren't Jewish, who don't feel Jewish, and if they could leave, would not leave.
That's equivalent to being exterminated physically.
That's what the Maccabees thought.
I tell you, that's not true.
Well, then why do the Maccabees rise up?
Frequently.
Why do the Maccabees rise up?
Because they were faced with an absolute blackout.
That's exactly what the Russian Jews were.
I say that Russian Jewry, the fate of Russian Jews, but the fact that I've got so many thousands.
Why don't you stick to your point? Is it not true that for 55 years the Russian Jews could not practice any part of their faith?
Yes.
Were there no schools?
Yes.
Were there not Israel blackout?
No, it isn't.
John, you are on it. Defensively, Rabbi Sam Silver, Rabbi Temple Sinai of Stamford, Connecticut. I recognize now Rabbi Meyer Kahn.
Well, as I was saying, like for Cadillac there, from. I think that what we fail to realize is that we live in a very, very bad world. And when it becomes good, then we can use methods that are good and nice. Children will have to bomb Dresden. And I purposely use that phrase, bomb Dresden. Because during World War II, there was a particularly brutal bombing of Dresden. It wasn't a bombing of it was a firebombing of Dresden for the purpose of smashing the morale of the German people. A lot of them were killed, a lot of them shouldn't have been killed. I don't recall protests at that time in America. I recall Jews saying, if you bring the war one day closer to an end, and the Jews of Auschwitz will be saved, then that's it. I know that in Israel, there are methods that are used which are not nice methods. And I think it's foolish for us to try and cover those methods. We have a clear dictum in the Talmud, if one comes to slay you, slay them first. It doesn't say try and talk them out of it, because you may not have time. And so I would like to see that day come when, not only when JDL doesn't use violence, I'd like to see that day come when there's no need for a JDL. But until that day comes, there will not be violence, because I'm tired of people saying, be better than they are. Don't stoop to their levels. Well, if you don't stoop to their levels, you'll be at a much, much lower level than where they are. You'll be dead. I've said often that all the spirits of Eastern Europe, all the centers, spiritual centers, the schools, the houses of prayer, the houses of worship, the houses of study, the Jewish soul is not enough to save Jews, because the soul can't exist without a Jewish body. And unfortunately, a Jewish body survives when Jews know how to fight back and use the kind of filthy, dirty, terrible methods which sometimes are the only methods that make a body survive.
Before I tell you why I'm sorry, I'd like to repeat for the benefit of those who are tuning in late, that I began by saying that I have a great deal of admiration for much of what Rabbi Kahane has presented and represented. I said that when he was in my pulpit. I said that when I had the opportunity of debating with this very distinguished personality. So I just want to make that clear before anybody goes to sleep, because you have a formula for putting people to sleep, Barry, but in my case, I just open my mouth and people fall asleep.
Unless people remember that commercial I did on the street, they said they don't think that's an insult from the pulpit. I don't like to get too many of them.
Well, I know that just last Friday night I was giving a very simple, I didn't get a sermon, one of the best you've written that had come on me. And a man fell asleep on the front row, and I said to his wife, wake him, and she said, you put him to sleep, you wake him.
I know the feeling. Three times this year already, I dreamed I was on the radio and woke up and found out it was true.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, I'm an honorary member of the Association of Anesthesiology. I don't use anything except my voice. So I just want to make it clear again that I have a great deal of affection and admiration for Rabbi Kahane. But I deplore the fact that he distorts history occasionally. He said the Talmud said that when you are to be slain, you slayed.
Mm-hmm.
I repeat again, the Russians are not slaying The Russians are depriving the Jews of the right to function. These are deplorable.
Which is death as far as Jews are concerned.
Well, I find a big difference between my telling you you can't talk on this microphone and my wiping you out.
I put it to you that Jews in Spain had a choice of living by giving up their faith.
1400s in
Brazil. 1492.
What does that have to do with what we're talking about?
Because they chose anything but that.
They didn't
expelled. But they didn't have to be expelled. They chose to be expelled.
The Russians are not asking them to become Christians.
No, they're asking them to give up. It doesn't matter to me. Whether someone comes and says, don't be Jewish, be Christian, or don't be Jewish, be Muslim, don't be Jewish, be a Marxist.
There's a difference
between the time of the Middle Ages went to the state willingly rather than have he or his children become Christian or Marxist or atheist or anything else.
It's not analogous.
Well,
not analogous. There are no auto de fe in Russia.
There is an auto de fe in Russia.
What does that mean? Auto means execution.
It's going alive.
That's not happening in that.
Rabbi, I'm astounded that you as a rabbi.
But if I can tell them you've been killing somebody and depriving them of their
faith. Cannot, as a Jew, understand that oftentimes Jews chose death. They chose death.
I'm talking about what's going on.
They chose physical death rather than have to live the kind of life whereby they couldn't be Jewish.
Irrelevant.
Irrelevant? Why is it irrelevant?
Because, as I said before, the Jews are coming out of Russia.
Yes, thanks to who?
Thanks to you.
But no thanks to you.
No, you initiated it. But
no thanks to you. Anyway.
No. I would like very much to plead with you to retain the Jewish sense of moderation and rationality. Because you started it doesn't mean that you're responsible for it. You helped.
No, my point is that you're a great deal older than I am. And again, when I said you, I don't mean me, you. I mean all of that particular generation of the 1950s and 1940s. And the Soviet Jewish problem is not new. It's at least as old as 1917. Now that is when this problem started. And we have a complaint to you, many you, the people who lived through that period and did nothing, and a great complaint for your silence during the 1940s when there was a physical Holocaust, when Jews were being killed, and when everyone knew that the bombings of the Auschwitz death camp and the railroads would have saved Jews. Why didn't you shoot into some building or why didn't you at the very least take your congregation from Stanford to Pennsylvania and you sit down with Dr. Heschel and Dr. Martin Luther King, if you had gone with you, and sing "We Shall Overcome"? You didn't even do that.
I was in uniform.
Good, fine.
I was in the American uniform.
Again,
I'm all
right. Again, I don't say you.
No.
I mean, that generation of sleeping lies and so on.
Sleeping lies with everything you could to just sleep.
Sleeping lies, God knows.
But it's irrelevant.
God knows. It's not you. Everything is irrelevant.
Let me continue on with my objections. You say that you approve of violence. And I say to you that the moment you approve of violence, you are no different from the enemy. Then you become like the enemy. There's got to be a distinction between those who find violence and needless killing repugnant and those who don't.
I find
every time I was in this area, I haven't done this. And the last time I was before this microphone, Barry Father, who has this extraordinary capacity for lining up and providing good programming, had here at these microphones a group of Jewish people, all of whom expressed their abhorrence over the fact that Arafat was allowed into the UN. Now, I despise Arafat because he involves himself in violence. Now, I am against Arab violence and I'm against Jewish violence. And the moment you begin to yield and, as you said before scornfully, stoop to the level of the enemy, then there's no distinction. What difference does it make to me whether I've got you or Arafat if you're both going to kill innocent people?
Okay. I think that your point is well taken. Let's get several points clear here.
forgive me, Rabbi, although I'm a minute and a half early, this is such a clear division point between you and Rabbi Saul that I think I will interrupt here, so I will not have to interrupt after you develop your point, forcing you thereupon to redevelop it when we move at that time. We convene. Let's do it now. Rabbi Saul, in Stamford, Connecticut, Rabbi Meir Kahana, a citizen of Israel, is the founder of the Jewish Defense League. Rabbi, will you restate Rabbi Saul's previous point? And answer it.
Well, I'm trying to be justice to it. I had mentioned saying in the Talmud that if one comes to slay him first, and Rabbi Silver took issue with it in the sense that violence is not good, this is something else, and that there is some kind of an equal status between Arafat and JDL, and that therefore we didn't like Arab violence, even more Jewish violence. I put it to you that what you probably mean is that not that you don't like violence, but that you don't like violence which is not necessary or which is not needed, because obviously as a soldier in World War II you were a violent person, but you excuse that violence because it was for what you thought was a good cause. Quite sure that the Quakers looked upon the Israel a brutal, savage type of person, because they're a consistent breed, if not too clever, but they're a consistent breed. They are opposed to real violence. You aren't. So you also pick your violence. You pick your violence. When you think violence is good, then you're a violent person. I put it to you that Tony also says that if one has no knowledge, how can we differentiate between violence and non-violence or between anything? To equate the JDL with the PLO is to really equate the bomb of Coventry with that of Dresden. When the British dropped bombs and the Germans dropped bombs, it was not the same thing. That's a simplistic argument. There's a difference. There's a motive. Cops are not robbers. Robbers are not cops. Cops have guns for a purpose. And if they use those guns within that context of that purpose, then those guns and the violence are not only not a bad thing, but a very, very blessed thing, since it saves innocent people. I repeat again to you that the state of Israel uses violence, and it has been known. It has made efforts, but it has been known to kill women and children. Not purposely, of course. But the fact of the matter is that when Israelis bombed Cairo in 1970, and accidentally dropped bombs on a school, and 70 children were killed, it is a tragic thing. That's not the PLO. To state that the JDL, which came into being as a reaction to attacks upon Jews, with the PLO, which came into being to attack people, is not a very, very clever thing.
But we're all on New York, Rabbi Sam Silver.
I don't even like the bombing of Dresden.
I'm sure you didn't.
Oh, sure. And as a matter of fact, I didn't approve of the dropping of the atomic bomb. I would have approved of the plan that was offered, namely to warn the Japanese that they would have an atomic bomb and then drop it on an uninhabited island to show the extent of its destruction, hoping in that way to spare human life. So that my own predilection, which I think is characteristically Jewish, was to avoid as much as possible the shedding of blood. Now, I submit to you that, and I've said this already a half a dozen times, but apparently you won't buy it, but I see that the Nazis were not in the same, the Nazis are not in the same category as the communists, because the Nazis threatened not only the extermination of the Jews, Rabbi Kamani, the Nazis threatened the extermination of civilization. But even then, it was the Nazi soldiers and the Nazi leaders that we were out after. But you say, in such casual fashion, that the shooting of into a bedroom occupied by women and children.
It is a very necessary cause.
I don't think it was necessary. I think it could have been avoided.
You think that?
Yes.
You think
the matter of fact, that Hitler himself was the footage of the refusal of the civilized world to take adequate measures short of conflict and strife to squelch his emergence.
It's closer that the policy of violence
is in itself disastrous and calamitous. You glorify it.
Hey,
you didn't know whether there were women and children in there. You didn't have said tonight, as your spokesman said, and as your spokesman said the last time. You know, the Talmud also says, if you want to quote the Talmud also says that if you commit a sin, you will be forgiven if the second time around you have the same temptation and you resist it. So last time somebody shot into the bedroom,
it wasn't a sin then, it isn't a sin then.
No, actually, yes. So that it's not a sin. You shoot into a bedroom.
It's not a sin to use terror against the Soviet Union's
women and children.
Against the Soviet Union's
women and children.
There were no women, there were no children the first time, there were no women, there were no women the second time.
How do you know?
How do you know that there were?
How
do you know that they were?
Well, let me ask
you. How do you know that they were?
Well, that's what I can say.
They were in the bedroom. And they don't know. It wasn't a bedroom.
It wasn't.
It wasn't a bedroom.
It was a room.
It was a room.
It was an office. It was not an office. It was a living quarters.
How do you know?
That's what the newspaper says.
That's what the Russian
says. No, that's what the newspaper says.
Do you get around it?
I'll ask you a question.
Let's ask
the
question.
Those are all bedroom. Did you justify that?
Absolutely not.
Okay. I don't know whether you agree, but your spokesman didn't.
No, we haven't agreed at all. Not at all. Because you would say that shooting into that mission anywhere, whether it was into an office occupied by the KGB.
No, we would not care. I probably would say that.
I know you would.
Nonetheless.
So we differ.
So do you believe in shooting into the office of the KGB?
I certainly do.
You do? You mean that any representative of Russia should be executed?
What is he saying? If that would be the only way.
Well, is it the only way?
So if that would be the only way.
What do you mean?
Well, if you let me finish, then I'll be going away. You see, that's what I'm saying. If that were the only way to save the Russian Jews, then I would shoot into the office of the KGB or the XYZ.
Is it the only way?
Apparently, it was.
It was when? The last week or the month? A couple of weeks from now?
3 years ago, 5 years ago, eight years ago. You know that I'm...
Let me tell you about that. Your cause, the JBL cause, suffered from it. When that JBL said, we approve of this kind of an attack, believe me, the one who suffered most was JBL, and JBL is suffering.
This is... This is the basic difference, I think, between you and me.
Mm-hmm.
There are many, many things that we've done which have helped Jews and hurt the ABL.
Yeah.
But that choice is something we'll always take. We'll always suffer if it will help Jews.
No, the JDL did pretty well for a while.
The JDL did well only because it was helping Jews. There comes a certain time when by our doing the right thing by Jews, we will suffer.
You're doing the wrong thing and that nullified your goodwill.
The only reason why 100,000 Jews have gotten up in the last 6 years is because
my love is Jews. You've got a membership of 100,000.
100,000 Jews have gotten out of the
Union because of
Senator Jackson. Was because Senator Jackson.
Why is he so laughable?
On the contrary, I was for Senator Jackson when you were for the McGovern type. But
you were for Nixon.
I was for Nixon because he was good for Jews and he was good for this country. And McGovern isn't. And I would put it to you that you as a Jew and as a rabbi should choose your candidates by a certain yardstick. And you don't use that yes,
I don't know,
because I know that.
Well, how do you know that the government wasn't good for the Jews?
Because someone who's for quotas, someone who is for cutting aid to Israel, someone who is for making Israel go back to the 1967 lines is bad for the Jews.
You are
a liberal and a Jew.
Yeah.
And when there's a conflict, you choose liberalism always.
That'd be quite so stupid. I don't know if it was you, I would be very fond of you.
Yeah, but you know,
there's
a
different combat of that.
He is a Stanford. A few years ago, Rabbi Abraham came here, and he said, Barry, there is in a Soviet prison right now a young woman named Silva Zalmanson, and she is ill. She tried to hijack a plane for the motive of achieving freedom with the so-called Leningrad 8. And I'm here to tell you, you're listening, Rabbi Abraham, if I'm squirming, please, what are you doing right now? He said, Barry, I'm here to warn the Russians over these microphones that if anything happens to Silva Zalmanson, what's going to happen to a lot of Russians? And I remember thinking, like the people who knew horses thought the car would never work, and the people who knew early cars thought the airplane would never work, and the people who knew even airplanes thought the moonshot would never work. I know the Soviet Union put pentafoil in my vein and asked me about the Soviet Union. My concept would be the 1948 Soviet Union, the Stalin Soviet Union, the real tight, hermetically sealed Iron Curtain Soviet Union, where they don't put up with warnings from the likes of my Air Kahana from a Western country. And I remember thinking the chances of Silva Zalmanson to emerge are nil. And I thought about that when I met Silva Zalmanson after she indeed was released and came to America and inspired audience after audience. I recommend you try to have her at Temple Sinai in Stanford, Connecticut. She's young, she's beautiful, she seems unaffected, unafflicted, and she's just thoroughly beautiful. And I can't help but congratulate her because the punchline of her remark, she doesn't speak much English, she does it through an interpreter, and her punchline is, we shall overcome. That knocks them out every time. But the question is, has Silva Zalmanson communicated to you, Rabbi Kahana, have you met her, and does she approve the Jewish Defense League?
Well, I didn't contact her, and she didn't contact me. I was here in the States when she got out. In fact, I arrived in this country when she arrived in Israel. And then, oddly enough, on the day that I went back, she came here. So we've been missing. And I do know what she's said to other people about us. And to say that she likes us and backs us is really... Well, she does. And I think that she knows more than anyone else that when her name was unknown, it's not known, when you said it. By the way, without going into whoever shot into the mission that first time, the message that first time was, it was October 1971, from Senator Zalmanson. The following week, she got medicine for the first time. The Soviet Union is not afraid of the JDL, but the Soviet Union is very, very much afraid of what was until recently. There may be a change now, but until recently, it was very much afraid of losing a détente which it wanted so badly. And you don't build bridges between Moscow and Washington when shots are being fired into the Soviet Union. That's what violence was about. It wasn't a mindless violence. It wasn't a useless violence. It was a political kind of violence. I've said it many, many, many times on this program until I say it again. When former U.S. ambassador to the UN, Charles Yost, called me up one day after he had done some other violent thing, un-Jewish, outrageous, terrible, etc., etc. Mr. Yost called me up and he said that he would like to see me. I went to see him because I didn't often get to see the U.S. ambassador in the UN. And he said, you're harming American foreign policy. And I said, that's exactly the point. Now you've gotten the point. We want Jews, make the Russians pay. We want Jews. That was what we were doing. Being fools. We knew that the Russians were frightened of a small group of people. But they were frightened at what a small group of people could do to what they wanted. Now they've torn up a trade pact. I hope that it's a bluff, because if it isn't a bluff, we will see in the year and in the years to come a possible return to that Stalinism which we thought was once gone.
Well, I had a joint, Barry, Rogan Connolly. In the plot of what you've done, as I said before, I think that many of the things that you've done are commendable. Certainly the dramatization of the plight of Russian Jews is one of the things for which you are responsible, and that's why I say that I think that you're going to be well inscribed in history. Ambassador Yost will one day be known to posterity because he one time chatted with the founder of the Jewish Defense League. Furthermore, I feel that you're a very important gadfly on the body politic of the Jewish establishment. I commend you for that. Also, I have a great deal of admiration, Barry, for Robert Connolly's literary abilities. If you don't mind an extra commercial, for which I have no vested interest whatsoever, his writings in a newspaper called the Jewish Press are fascinating. You write beautifully. And, well, if I can usually have two columns in the Jewish Press, don't you really write that column?
We shall find them. I have one in my scrapbook, but I'm not going to tell you which one.
Oh, the one where he plays with Barry Baldwin.
Never mind. No, he doesn't. It's not that one, but you're too close for comfort.
He writes beautifully. However, I repeat that if it were written, there would be no Soviet Zionists in the back of the out, no matter what you did, no matter if I should be burned alive. So therefore, I still insist that to equate those that extinguish life and those that extinguish religion is to be myopic and vitiates much of the effectiveness of your program and of your procedures. I also want to underscore the fact that both of us are concerned about the survival of Judaism. We do indeed debate. We have our differences, but this is also part of the Jewish tradition. You refer to the Talmud, and you give the impression to the intuitive listener that the Talmud is monolithic. It only has one position. The Talmud is precisely a replica of what's happening here. Jewish people, we have the same general objectives, but we diverge with regard to the methodology in achieving them. And I say the moment that you again succumb to the level of the enemy, the moment you glorify violence for the sake of violence, and the moment that you obliterate what seemed to be so prudent and obvious to anyone else, namely the distinction between those who kill people and those who stifle religion, at that moment you cease to be Jewish. Sir, you become Arabaculous.
Again, I'll just say this once more, and then I really do want to go on to I'll say it again. The Jews have two holidays, Hanukkah and Purim. Both are Jewish holidays. One represents a struggle against an enemy in Persia that tried to physically wipe out Jews. One represents a fight against the Greeks who did not want to kill our Jews, but who wanted to do exactly to Jews what the Soviets wanted to do to Jews inside Russia, prevent Judaism. In both cases, the Jews, in fact, are proceeding to war. In the case where there was a physical problem, the Jews did not rise up, they fasted. In the case where there is a problem of the Jews faced with a possibility of living, but not as Jews, they rose up and took Greek lives. And so, whether I'm Jewish or not Jewish has to be judged by those people who know what Judaism has always stood for. I do want to throw out one outrageous thing, because I've come to this country and I've been here for 6 weeks more
than to America.
It's a nice country. I've come here really to lead the struggle in this country against the terrible, dangerous policies of the government of Israel.
I knew
you would love this thing.
Oh, really?
I'm not finished yet.
Yeah,
I'm
very, very,
very, very, Can I speak English with you? Israel faces a tremendous problem, and that is U.S. pressure. U.S. checking of Israel to give up that land in return for nothing. Except Rabbi Silver, one of the things that the Talmud says is that we should let someone say something finish.
Can you describe the Talmud? All three of us in this room are Jewish, and we throw around words like Talmud, and there are people listening who I'm sure would like to stay abreast of the conversation. What is the Talmud?
The Talmud is the oral of the Torah. It was a written Pentateuch, the five books of Moses, and the oral is the Talmud, which amplifies it. Now, in any case, the pressure upon Israel to get back land is a disaster. One of the tragedies is that while this is going on, American Jewish leadership, as it does well, is silent. And the government of Israel is nothing under giving in. I'm here to attempt to arouse American Jews to run, protest, shout, scream loud, sit in, and demand that American pressure stop. To arouse the American Jewish leaders to either lead or to leave.
You're going to shoot on the Jewish government.
And I say, well, that isn't even clever,
isn't it?
You're clever. You're wrong, but clever. Thirdly, and this is the main thing, to take the radical step of telling the American Jew that it is not only his right but his obligation to attempt to change the policies of the government of Israel and indeed the government itself. So what I'm pumping here for is a new government to replace the present one, a government of national unity based upon the principle of not giving up one inch of territory.
Well, you're right, that is outrageous. It's outrageous for you who went to Israel, presented your case, ran for office, got defeated overwhelmingly, you were crushed.
Well, that's by 2,000 votes.
Come on, that's an overwhelming defeat. You were crushed.
No, it's not. I lost by 4,000
votes. I see, you two have something in common.
8,000.
You were ignominiously defeated.
Not only that,
but you became very obnoxious. Because you said that you felt that the diplomats ought to be kidnapped or something.
Yeah.
You said it to
me? Yes.
No, you said that the Arab diplomat, you said something absolutely.
Well, tell me.
Well, what did you say?
Well, you know that.
Well, what did they send you to jail for?
It's a different story.
What did you say?
What I said?
You ended up, you were incarcerated.
Right.
So that's bad enough.
I said that I said that it's about time that the Jews formed an anti-terror group to give to the terrorists what they give to the Jews.
You didn't say that about the terrorists.
You said that about the Arab diplomats. You asked me. And then you attempted to do it. And if you think that attempting to form an anti-terrorist group is bad, then you'd make a great minister in this present Israeli cabinet.
I know that I'll never attain the high place in history, in Jewish history, that you have, but I'm happy that I didn't say anything about Khamenei. Now, what is really most outrageous, as you say, I'm quoting you, outrageous, is that you want to come over here and have us. And you said, I've been reading your material, you say that we American Jews have the right to tell the Israelis how they run their government.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that is unforgivably condemnable.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're a country and they're entitled to run their own country, and their diplomatic skill, I think it's...
I was stamped at Connecticut, and Rabbi Meir Kahana, founder of the Jewish Defense League. Rabbi Kahana, my motive is not to anger you or to anger your followers right now. There's something that hasn't come up, the so-called shot in the bedroom. Incidentally, was anybody hit? That shot in the bedroom is there.
Okay. That shot in the bedroom seems to be the one little circle of JBL violence that has been focused on during this broadcast.
Yeah. Typical.
I remember, and this was a product of my Boy Scout training, I can't help myself, way back before that shot in the bedroom, I noticed the charismatic impact of my Air Kahana as a person. He never ages, he claims no supernatural powers, but I bet you he sleeps a total of 45 minutes a week. He's just that kind of guy who uses himself as solid fuel. And I realized that he was an important leader, and I invited him to lunch. We went out together because what I wanted him to do was continue what I considered the good things of JBL and lay off the violence. And I had about as much effect as dropping a rose petal down the Grand Canyon waiting for an echo. He was nice. We had a great lunch together. It was at a restaurant, New Secrets, in Midtown Manhattan, Kosher. And I'm sure Rabbi Kahana did not object to my imploring. He has heard it from sources vastly higher level than a radio broadcaster. But something happened after that that interested me monumentally and depressed me totally, and that was the secretary who worked for Sajura, who did lose her life because of, I won't say JBL violence, I think I'll be legally precarious. I don't want to say that, but you have to take responsibility. Now, let's find out if he does. My point is this. You know, a working girl in a New York City office, I think she was Jewish, wasn't she? That really got to me because I have a fantasy. I'm learning Arabic right now. I have a little, one of those 8-track stereo things in the car, and I have an Arabic cassette. And whatever the Arabic is like the Hebrew, I have an easy time. Like, their word for one is wahat in Arabic, and in Hebrew it's achas. Their word for four is arba. Yom Kippur in Arabic is Yom Kabir. I'm trying to get a grip on the language. Anyhow, here's an American citizen, American journalist, lined up in Arab capital doing my job and get killed by an Israeli bomb. I don't think that would depress me as much if that were to happen, because I would feel that there would be a motive for that bomb in that place, and I would not applaud as the bomb got closer and closer to me, but I do think I could accept that condition more readily than I could accept the death of South Iraq's secretary who just went to work. And I wonder how Maria Kamina squares that in retrospect.
I thought in one of two ways. Firstly, we have three of our youngsters who have this trial pending, and therefore I won't say anything about that.
That trial is still pending a long time ago.
Yes, it is. They haven't had proof, they haven't had evidence, but it's still pending. That's one thing. Secondly, speaking of the abstract, there hasn't been a war or struggle ever in which anyone has been able to aim every bullet in the right way. A lot of innocent people were killed in a lot of wars, in a lot of wars which nobody would argue with. How many French were killed when the Allies bombed France in their effort to free France? The death of that girl was a terrible, terrible thing. It was really a terrible thing. And I'm sure that it's not the first time, it's not the last time that such things will happen, not just here, but in many, many places in this world. Life is not fair, life is not predictable, it's not a chess game, it's not mathematics. It was a tragedy, and that's all that I'm going to say about that.
Rabbi, there's another argument that you don't often get asked on radio and television, or by newspaper reporters, or magazine reporters, or interviewers. It's not only violence versus nonviolence. How about the concept of the deliberate, assiduous confinement of violence to the combat zone? Now, World War II, which was pretty total, had in the middle of it a Switzerland, a Sweden, a Portugal, American embassies all around, Nazi German embassies all around, Japanese embassies all around. There was a Japanese embassy in Moscow when we were fighting Japan, and Russia was our ally, but Russia wasn't yet fighting Japan. And there was sort of an unwritten rule that people didn't fire into bedrooms or that
railroad elevators.
That's not true at all. If you're speaking here about mindless violence, that's one thing. But if you're saying that violence, when it is practiced by violent people who sit and say, "Will this violence help?" That's a very, very different story. What possible benefit would ever bring to the American government for bombing the Japanese embassy in a Russia which had its own reasons for wanting to stay out of that war? The only reason why that embassy was not touched was because it was to the American interest not to touch it. Had the U.S. sat down and said, "Listen, it is to our interest to have this boat bombed," it would have been bombed. There were numerous cases of all kinds of spies and counter spies being shot in Lisbon and Ankara and so on.
Spies and counter spies. But I bet there were many, many more incidents of Norwegian heroes taking a vacation from shooting Nazis in Norway. They sneaked across the border, not even Hitler could guard that Norwegian-Swedish border. It was half as long as the American-Canadian border. They go over to Stockholm for a two-week vacation. Now, I bet you they open department store doors for the wives of Nazi diplomats in Stockholm while that was going on. I'm talking about the concept of confinement of violence to the combat zone.
There's a time and there's a time. The fact of the matter is that if it were possible to fight Russia on a military level in a combat zone, if Israel had the kind of army which was either ready or willing or able to fight Russia openly, you wouldn't need this. But every small group which seeks its independence and which cannot fight openly uses other methods and other tactics. I'm quite sure that there isn't a person in this room that doesn't realize that there are African freedom fighters and Asian freedom fighters, and we applaud them and so on. There's a tremendous difference between World War II, in which you had armies capable of fighting each other, and between a struggle which is not equal, it's inherently unequal.
Don't you see a vested interest, even a vested narrow-gauge Jewish interest, in reinforcing the concept of keeping the violence in the combat zones and not at early airport, not in South Carolina?
You can sit here and argue all night. I put it to you. It's not Passover, and in Passover we always ask, "Mamish, tell me, what is the difference between this and this? What was the difference in these past six years prior to Jackson, prior to Javis?" Well, some Javis rose from the dead in Washington and became a Soviet Jewish fighter. Come on. What was the difference? What suddenly made this thing change? And I put it to you that it was the violent threat to that detente which the Russians wanted.
Absolutely not.
Then what is the reason?
What is the reason? I'm going to tell you what your greatest danger is, and I will attack you frontally on this. Just incidentally and parenthetically, what Barry raised, I think, is extremely germane, very salient. You say you regret the loss of that woman. You are responsible for the loss.
Wait, I'm responsible.
Right.
Now, let's get back.
You are responsible for that, and you are responsible also for any of the deprivations on the part of your followers, because you are a charismatic figure. Barry has properly characterized you. You are a very dramatic. You have a way of evoking loyalty on the part of your followers, which on the one hand is admirable, on the other hand is terrifying, but they don't do any thinking for themselves. They think the way you tell them to do, as in the case of any other dogmatic dictatorial kind of a regime. And I've seen your followers, and I've heard your followers, and I've been heckled and booed by your followers, and in a highly un-Jewish fashion, okay? I guess what you're sorry is that it was the woman who was killed and not South Iraq, who was the target, because he wanted to bring a cultural exchange. Now I come to the very nub of what I find most objectionable in your case, aside from the fact that I told you in New Jersey once, run with you until your people become obscene, obnoxious, and obstreperous. This world badly needs the big cop. We're trying to destroy it. This is a world that is a nuclear world. It is not the world of the Maccabees, and it is not the world of the Haman. This is a nuclear world. And we must never get up. And I'll quote you a dozen citations from the Talmud, which you say,
let's try one, okay?
Something, okay. I will give you the more important holiday of Passover. Moses pleaded and pleaded and pleaded with Pharaoh.
And then God shut him down.
Right, because the 10 plagues, and apparently the present Egyptians want 10 more plagues before we let the Jews go. Now this country, this world badly needs the talk. It badly needs the relaxation of tension. This world has a chance to attain it. It couldn't have attained it with Hitler when you constantly parallel with the Russians, but there is a chance to do it. And you say the Russians aren't afraid of you. They find you rather worrisome. This world needs the reconciliation between the United States and Russia, between the West and the East. And you are opposed to it. You are opposed to it, Rabbi Kahane, because from the very beginning of your efflorescence as an important personality, you have been an antediluvian reactionary. You have always favored a very conservative position. And that conservative position means a Cold War position. And that is probably the most objectionable part of your program.
All right. I think that you've raised a tremendously vital pointer, and I'd really like to touch on that. First of all, you're prepared to take the kind of a stand which says the thought, the possibility of war now is so terrible that we must do everything, including the selling out of people.
No, I didn't say that.
Not Rabbi Sol. Please, let me finish and then you say no, it isn't true. Including the selling out of people to do so. And that's not my particular view. To me, life is a very vital thing. But as a Jew, I know that there's something much more vital, and that is how one lives that life. You said Moses, he pleaded and pleaded and pleaded. Look, Moses came across and Egyptian who was killing a Jew. He didn't plead with him. He killed him.
You used that before, and that is one of the most libelous assertions that you could ever make.
It's in the Bible.
No, the Bible. Listen, I heard you say it before, and you're wrong.
It's in the Bible. Book of Exodus.
Now listen carefully.
Chapter 2.
The Bible says when the Egyptian mistreated the Jew,
he was beating him.
When he was beating him. Oh, now listen carefully. Glad I'm going to spike this for once and for all, though it may not have any impact.
Right, go ahead.
The Bible says that when the Egyptian taskmaster was beating the Jew,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
Moses looked this way and that way.
And he saw there were no men.
Now the Talmud says.
Yes.
The Talmud says.
And now you're close to Talmud?
Yes.
A reformed rabbi?
Right. Or even a reformed rabbi.
Yes.
And by the way, I would never define the Talmud the way you did for example.
I know that.
Never.
I know that.
That
and that's why.
I cite the Talmud every time I preach. Right. The Talmud says
yes.
that Moses looked to see whether there was anyone who was regulating the affairs of those people. He saw no one. Therefore, because he saw no one, he took the law in his hands. We are not in that position.
Why not?
Because there happened to be the possibility for civilized amenities to bring about the relaxation of this war.
Rabbi Silver. On the day that you moved from Stamford, Connecticut,
yeah.
and the good life to Leningrad, come back to me and make the same kind of speech you just made. The great tragedy is how people who are not suffering are incapable of feeling the pain of anyone else. Don't play games with me. Moses went out, an Egyptian was beating a Jew. He looked around to see if there was anyone who had the guts. Well, the feeling.
No, not what the Talmud
and
is.
Then he
that's
went out
the
and he killed
is.
And
you
he
are,
killed the
you are falsifying
and
the Talmud. The Talmud
killed
said
the Egyptian.
He was looking for a policeman.
And the same Moses went out and he killed people
no,
from
he didn't.
Amalek and he killed Og
right.
and he killed Sihon.
Right.
And I don't know
and
how
every,
I don't know how,
and
how,
every
your,
instance,
how
Moses
your temple
did.
Allows that book in its holy ark.
Because it is the proper Talmudical interpretation mitigates the violence.
Gentlemen, you certainly helped us spike the myth that Jews all stick together. Somebody once said the only thing two Jews can agree on is how much a third Jew should give to charity. Well, I feel that we have an equilateral triangle right here, because although I may appear to have differences with my heir Kahana, my differences with Rabbi Silver are now emergent. Incidentally, Rabbi, I was not being rude when I looked away from you and started writing something when you were talking. I was paying you the highest compliment I can give. I was writing down a word you use that I intend to make mine. Efflorescence. Do I have New York rights to that? Coast to coast, maybe?
Oh,
all right. You said we need detente. And I don't see why we need detente with a power which is a dictator, coast to coast in its own way, Pacific to the Baltic and the Adriatic, which denies its people. I won't even call the roll call of human rights, because they're total. They deny their people all those human rights. I would much rather have the abrasion that calls from calls for democracy standing up and countering that than for a sick, weak detente, which I think would help them monumentally and destroy us.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, I feel that Russia can be dealt with. I feel that that the alternative is so frightening. I think there's a difference, Barry and Rabbi Kahane, between opposing Russia and engaging in war with her. I don't say that we must approve of Russia. I think we should resist them, and I think we are resisting them. I think we are expressing our antithesis. I regret the fact that this country so often hobnobs and makes its allies many dictators, and sometimes we pick the wrong government. And I'm sorry that we don't do the things against this fellow in Africa called Amin.
He's up post-host. He wouldn't like to see him debate higher.
So that I am not saying that we must not oppose them and resist them and express our objections to them. But I'm saying, my dear friends, that it is imperative for us to keep reasoning with them and trying to establish a raison, what do they call it?
Raison d'etre?
Modus vivendi, yes, sir.
I must differ with that.
I know you do.
The only thing that saved the world, Western Europe, Greece, and Turkey, and so on, was the hard line of Harry S. Truman, who had that really tremendous American insight.
Hamish heroism.
Nixon calling soft on communism.
Good. I don't care what Nixon called him, because the fact
is was your hero.
That thank God that it was men like Harry S. Truman that understood that, and thank God that this incredible comment that you just made, that we've got to reason for the Russians. The Russians understand reason when it's backed by a solid fist. Now, I'm ready to speak with the Russians, certainly, but I've got certain demands. And I'm not ready to sign a treaty over the bodies of Jews, Ukrainians, Lithuanians, Latvians, and all the other conquered peoples. I'm stunned by this apparent lack of feeling, which is covered by a so-called liberal cloak.
Why do you say that? I say we should resist and we should oppose Russia, but not on the battlefield.
Gentlemen, this is as close to a comma or an interruption as we're going to get right
comma.
Now. And I must say goodbye and thanks very much to you both for so ably exemplifying that which differentiates your viewpoints. The argument goes on. Should the Jew of Torah become a Jew of terror to avoid becoming the Jew of termination? The two sides of that argument polarized and crystallized here, represented by Rabbi Meir Kahane, founder of the Jewish Defense League, and Rabbi Sam Silver, rabbi of Temple Sinai of Stamford, Connecticut. Boy Scout training only goes so far. I'd never try to make genuine peace between these two gentlemen, even though they're both good, old, treasured friends of these microphones. Thank you very much for coming.